everybody, and welcome to Hooked on Hitchcock. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got my co-host here with me. How are you doing, G. Larry Butler?
Hey, folks. How you doing? Another exciting episode.
Yes, exactly. And then we've got a special guest today, our first guest for the show. We're really excited. Don's been supportive of our stuff for so long, helping us out, pimping us every second. So we really appreciate it. And we wanted to ask him to come on and chat with us. Please welcome Don and Ellie. How are you doing, Don?
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you. So we're going to be talking about the 1954 film Dial M for Murder, you know, which based on a play by Frederick Knotts. It is a I'll go into it before we get into like backgrounds. So I had seen this movie. I bought the Blu-ray, which I had over here somewhere, but it's not, it's over there. And the Blu-ray, which is actually a 3D Blu-ray. And I had watched it, and the first time I saw it, I thought it was okay, you know, wasn't great. It was kind of boring. It lagged or whatever. And then just recently today, rewatched it, thinking that I was going to be in the same mindset, and absolutely loved it. It was just, I don't know what it was. Maybe I wasn't feeling it that day, or maybe I was just expecting a little bit more action. But this movie was just really, really good. First off, Don, had you seen this movie before?
Yeah. This will probably be a little strange for some people, but I'm a little bit more familiar with Hitchcock than most people would assume I would be. I kind of grew up around with my grandparents and my grandmother especially. Hitchcock was her favorite director.
Oh, wow.
So, I've seen pretty much everything from Rebecca onward. I haven't seen his stuff over in UK or his silent stuff, but I would imagine I've seen everything. I'd have to check to make sure, because I mean, it's probably been, for most of these, it's been since the 90s since I've seen it, because that's when she and I would watch them. But yeah, Dial M for Murder was one of her favorites. Her favorite was Rebecca, of course, and then I think this one was up there, and then I believe it was Shadow of a Doubt, or nice. It was Shadow of a Doubt or Rope. I can't remember which one, but yeah, those were her favorites. And then for me, it was Vertigo was my favorite. And then shortly after that, it was Man Who Knew Too Much and Strangers on a Train.
Nice.
I have seen Dial M for Murder before, and I do agree it is kind of a multiple watch kind of a film, just because you need the intricacies of what's going on, which we can talk about later. But yeah, long-winded, but to answer your question, yes, I have seen it before.
All right, well, thank you. And Larry, had you seen it before?
I saw it once before because of our assignment, but I don't think I'd ever seen it prior to that. And then I just saw it again for the second time, and I agree with you, because I too had much more appreciation for it the second time, because I picked up some things that I glossed over the first time. I think I watched it with my wife, and we just watched it for entertainment purposes. But then I watched it and stopped it and took notes, and you know, that way. And so you get a lot more when you do that. You start, stop, to, you know, go back, review what you think. Oh my God, what did I just watch? You know, and you can really get the full essence of it that way. So yes, I loved it as well. It was very crisp and very fast paced. Some people thought that it was a little slow, but and talky, but then you need that for exposition. And for an intellectual, it's riveting. So yep. For a common person, probably not.
Right. I mean, this isn't a person, like this isn't for, like if I were to recommend a movie for like a normal person who isn't into Hitchcock and kind of wants to go, I mean, obviously there's Psycho or The Birds or North by Northwest, Vertigo, all of those typical ones. But this movie is sort of like for people who are really into Hitchcock, you know, and want to like, so what I got out of it this time was this, after seeing Shadow of Doubt recently and knowing Strangers on a Train, which will be on our list of movies for the first season, Strangers on a Train, you know, is a movie about these two people planning to, well, this one guy play, you know, kind of sets up a thing where if I murder your wife, you have to murder my mother or something like that or whatever, right? Or vice versa, whatever it was. They have a deal, right? Then, and that's sort of what happens with this is the guy says, hey, I want you to murder my wife. You know, I won't be there, blah, 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 blah. All this stuff, right? And if you do, I pay you, you know, such and such a money. I think it was like $1,000. I'm like, really? That's pretty low. Like, I don't know. I think that's what it was. So then anyway, he ended up, you know, doing that. And what was the other one? Oh, and Shadow of a Doubt had a scene, where, Hume Crone and the other guy, the one you said you look like you, Larry, you know,
Henry Travers. Yeah.
So those two were at the dinner table talking about how they would murder each other. And this one had a scene where the guy is talking about with the detective novelist, like, how would they get away with murder? You know, right? Like, this is how you would do it. And so I had a feeling like how Alfred Hitchcock loved figuring out ways to murder people, you know, or whatever. Like, you know, I could probably see him doing that in his own house of like, thinking, you know, how could I murder, you know, if I wanted to get away with it, how could I murder this person, you know? And it's sort of a fun, like, the movie itself is fun. It's based on a play, so of course there's going to be a lot of talking. To me, the first time I watched it, like I said, it was a little slow to me because I think I wasn't in the mindset of it. But then going into it, knowing it was a little bit slower. There's only one action scene in the whole movie, you know, really. And that's the murder. After then, it's like before the murder, and then after the murder is all just talking and trying to figure this stuff out. But it's where the suspense comes in.
And the murder takes place even before half the movie's over. So you have another half a movie with just talking about it and trying to figure out why and when and who and, so, yeah, it was interesting, but it's such a dark, Hitchcock has such a dark sense of humor. I love it. You know, he always puts himself in the movie too. Did you find him this time?
I did. Yes.
Yeah. I caught him. I actually caught him the first time only because my grandmother pointed him out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, I would have missed him.
Yeah.
He's at the table with a murderer.
Yes.
He's sitting in the photograph.
You know, I thought of another funny bit he could have done. He could have been in the phone booth when the guy was trying to get in there to call his wife.
I thought that too.
Why didn't he do that? That would have been even funnier.
I think
the one he would have been, the one he could have been is walking across the street when the detectives are arriving, when they're bringing her back, he's walking across the street.
Right.
That would have been like one of his.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I think it might have been this. This is the only reason why I think that he wasn't in the phone booth. And because if you notice, Hitchcock likes to put himself in the movie fairly early on, you know. He doesn't like you to have to wait. Like, there's no suspense for him to find him or whatever. It's just like, if you find him, great. So I think that was the only reason. Because otherwise, I think he would have put himself in the phone booth because that was sort of, there was no dialogue or anything. So like,
I didn't like to interact with people though that much. So maybe that was another thing you would have had to, you know.
Remember when we watched Lifeboat, he was in the newspaper clipping. So yeah. I think he likes to put himself in like pictures from time to time.
Yeah.
So that way it doesn't take him out from actually directing the film too. You know, if he can put himself in a picture and that's his cameo, you know, he doesn't have to like stop directing to go, you know, to go sit out there and walk and, you know, and do all that stuff. He can just, you know, he can just continue on his merry way. So I think that's literally the only reasons why he liked to do stuff like that. But I am interested to see what the, you know, what he does on the next movies and, you know, other stuff. Like, those are always fun. And that's,
I have seen that the next one we're going to do, Notorious. And I could tell you, but I won't. Almost.
Oh, yeah, don't, because I haven't seen it in a while. All I remember is a drunk driving scene that would not work today. You know, that if you remain Notorious, that movie would not have that scene. That's the only thing I remember from that. But yeah, I can't wait. That's going to be a fun show too. Don, like, I guess you're our guest. Would you like to tell us a little bit about what this movie is about?
Okay. So, the movie begins with, this man coming back from a tennis trip. The names are, I'm terrible with names. I can't remember off the top of my head, but,
What was his name? It was like
Windus is the last name. Windus is the last
Tony
name.
Tony Windus, I think. Wasn't that Tony?
Yeah, Windus is the last name, but I can't remember the first name. Anyways, he comes back and he finds his wife visiting with a friend of hers. And through the course of conversation, the two men are left alone. And eventually it transpires that the husband knows that the guy was involved in cheating with his wife. And things eventually go from there to where he ends up hiring another friend of his, who is an old buddy of his from college, into murdering his wife and allowing him to get away with it, where he has this entire evening planned out down to the T, where he can, you know, have his alibi set, where he's out meeting friends. He ends up coming, you know, the friend of his comes back to the apartment, murders the wife and gets away with it. And then he can inherit the wife's money and live off of that for the rest of his life. And things go wrong from there. I don't know how much wrong. Further you want to spoil it, but.
Well, no, we're going to spoil the fuck out of this movie.
So. Okay, yeah.
So just know, you know, like if there's going to, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to say, oh, you know, you got to watch the movie to blah, blah, blah. Like if you watch the movie, great. Hopefully you've watched the movie, then listen to our show. You know, like I'm sorry, but I want to go in depth into this stuff.
Yeah.
So he gets like invited to a stag party, which I've never, Larry, have you ever been to a stag party?
Yes. Remembered.
So it looked like just a bunch of people playing poker or hanging out, like talking.
In college, I don't know if you're familiar with the initiation rituals they go through in these Phi Beta Kappa fraternity lodges and something like that. They put the groom through holy hell, and you know, they do a lot of strange things to him, and then they all get wildly drunk. And so, I mean, it's basically like the Masons, you know, they have these initiation rituals, and so that's basically what it is. They, you know, make them go through all kinds of stuff, crawl through garbage, these pour things on his head, and, you know, play tricks on him. They have strippers. And they might get him laid, you know, before the wedding and things like that.
Oh, so, okay.
It's pretty raunchy, pretty rowdy. It's fun.
So it's like a bachelor party.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like, exactly.
That's,
you know,
what a party is a bachelor.
That's what I was going to say. It was like a 50s version of a bachelor party.
Yeah, which, I mean, they didn't show it being that raunchy or anything. It looked
more refined.
I know, right? It looked like more classy to me. I don't know.
A bit sophisticated, you know.
Right. Speaking of sophisticated, I was talking to Larry about this before the show. I'm a huge fan of Grace Kelly. Like, and I got introduced to Grace Kelly by Alfred Hitchcock, you know, when I started watching all the Alfred Hitchcock movies, and she's by far my favorite blonde of all of his. Just like, I mean, not just her beauty, which her beauty was amazing, but the three movies that she was in, which were Dial in for Murder, Rear Window, and To Catch a Thief, all of them were great, you know. And, you know, Rear Window is actually my least favorite, which is almost everybody's favorite, you know. I don't know why. I just, I think it's
you have right behind you. You have a rear window right behind you.
I do.
Is that intentional?
No. That was never my plan. That's always that's always there, no matter what. So but yeah, so I just absolutely adored her in this movie. And we're talking, Larry and I were talking before that apparently a lot of people felt like she was sort of boring and kind of stagnant and kind of like whatever. And the first time I watched it, that's what I thought, you know, because I saw her in To Catch a Thief and she was very, you know, vivacious and, you know, like completely different. I think Rear Window, she was a little bit more like this character, you know. And so, but this time watching it, I thought she played it just perfectly well, because like her character's supposed to be like so confused, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. All of this shit's happening to her and she doesn't know what to do, you know, like she doesn't.
Befuddled. Yeah. He had totally controlled her and she was at his mercy. And it was like the Stepford wife, you know, almost. She was just totally brainwashed by him and guileless. And just, you know, I think that was what it was. And she, kind of an innocent.
And she was scared all the way up to the end. You know, did you guys notice that? Like, even when like, not all the way to the end of the movie, but like when she's, you know, it's speaking to the inspector, right? I absolutely love this movie. She was, and she found out, I guess the inspector had found out, you know, that the guy, you know, the blackmailing and stuff. So she, you know, so the husband found out, you know, Tony found out about that. And so it was just true.
Yeah.
And like, cause like at one point, you know, they were like, you know, was a letter taken from you? And she was like, no, because she did not want to tell the husband because she was scared still to that second of what the husband was going to think if he found out that she was having an affair. And the beauty is we never found out what was in that letter. No. Did we?
Yeah. It's a typical Hitchcock MacGuffin. Yeah. It's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Exactly, the MacGuffin. That's, you know, great. That, awesome word for Hitchcock, because he created that term and everything, coined the phrase MacGuffin. And yeah, it was, it like it was the letter. The letter kind of holds the whole movie together, but you don't know what's on in the letter at all, do you? You know,
it's a mystery. Yeah,
it's a mystery.
I've never heard of a MacGuffin. What is a MacGuffin? Is that from another movie?
Explain it.
No, I think that was, if I remember right, I remember he said that in like some interview as something that he put it in his films as it was something important that you never knew, like the characters knew what it was, but the audience didn't know. And it wasn't important for the audience to know. It was only important for the audience to know it was important to the characters in the film.
It maintains the suspense.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was.
He loved the milk.
I'm saying I know I'm butchering Hitchcock's thing badly, but I believe that was the original spirit behind it, if I remember right.
Notorious has, you know, Notorious has one with the stuff in the wine cellar or whatever. You know, we know about it, but we don't, you know, we don't know what is in the case or whatever. You know, that kind of stuff. Like, Tarantino uses a MacGuffin and you know, is a famous MacGuffin in Pulp Fiction, because you know, you don't know what's in the briefcase, you know, it's something's very important in that briefcase, you don't know what it is and you're dying to know what it is, and but you're never going to. And I'm sure Hitchcock got asked, you know, many times what was said in that letter, and it's just led up to your imagination, you know, of what was said. And obviously it was powerful enough to know that they were cheating, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's all you needed to know, was that she basically was caught. And plus he came and he saw them together and could tell that they were in love, you know, and stuff. So there's just, there's a lot with that going on. And I absolutely, I mean, I don't know, like this movie is so well done. So let's break down the cast real quick. We kind of talked about them briefly, but Ray Milland, played Tony, and he had been in movies like The Lost Weekend, Love Story, The Uninvited, you know, tons of great movies. And I think he had worked with Hitchcock a couple times.
He normally doesn't play the villain, does he? Was this unusual for him? I think I read that somewhere.
Probably.
Good guy, normally.
I know he played the villain in Frogs, but I don't know if that would be important because that was like 20 years later.
Right. Yeah. So that was 1972. You're right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I'm saying is like, that's 20 years later, like, you know, anything just for a job. Like, I wouldn't know if, like, well, I'm saying, I don't know if that would be like important or not.
Ah, he was Satan and King of Kings.
Well, that'll do it. Yeah. They saw the dark side. Yeah. By then. So he revealed himself. So he was very convincing as a wicked husband, vengeful.
Yeah, he was in Jamaica Run, Life of Her Own, A Woman of Distinction. Yeah, I think he usually played you know, good guys. So maybe that was the transition into bad guys, is doing that. And you know what? Back then, they did not like, you know, the audiences did not like somebody switching. Like nowadays, we crave that. You know, we want somebody to play good and bad, or even like a mixture or whatever. But back then, audiences hated it.
Well, to your point, Hitchcock, when he originally started it, the original choice for the role was Cary Grant.
Yes, exactly. But the studio didn't want Cary to do it because they didn't want him to be a villain. They wanted him to play the good guy, so they refused. Well,
that's funny. Then they went with Ray Milland, who I think was a good guy. Then, you know, they probably just didn't care as much for him. Like he wasn't the star Cary Grant was.
Right, he was the big
But so then there's Grace Kelly, and we've already talked about her. Then there's Robert Cummings, who played Mark Halliday, who was the detective novelist and lover.
Yeah.
Which I guess they were, from what I could gather from their conversations, was that Mark Halliday was like Margot's like best friend growing up or something, you know, but they started having feelings at some point after she stopped kind of, you know, being in love with Tony. So, you know, they fell in love and all that stuff. So, Robert Cummings had been in Saboteur, and I think you had told me about that, Larry, before. And he was on the Love Boat, I guess, movie? Or no, TV show. Okay, I thought that it was the movie or something. But
I was talking about Norman Lloyd, who just passed away at 106. He was in Saboteur and Spellbound. He was in two Hitchcock movies. I wasn't sure about the other guy, Robert Cummings, but
yeah, Robert Cummings was in Saboteur as well. He was the lead.
Oh, okay. I'd like to see that one. That'd be good.
We'll definitely do that one. That's on the list of things, you know, maybe it'll be this season. Cause I do like to, I'm going to try to do some of the older ones as well, you know, to spice it up a little bit. And I think that's available. I don't know where we can find that, but you can, Larry, you find them on Netflix. So, Larry still gets the DVDs. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I still get them. I'm very old school.
Yeah, which is great. Fantastic for this show. Absolutely. Cause you know, all the, I think all Hitchcock movies are on Netflix DVD, I would imagine.
Just about all. One was on Tubi. I had to go for Notorious.
Notorious is on Tubi?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think it popped up because I couldn't remember which one it was on. So I started searching for all the Hitchcock films on every service I had. And I think I chose Tubi because I forgot that you said that. I think I went into Tubi and I just typed Hitchcock in to find it. And I think Notorious was on the same like line when you for the search results when you pop, when you typed it in. So I think it is on there.
Hey, man, Tubi is kicking ass. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I used to like them a little bit, but now I'm just like, I'm using them for like everything, you know, like for all my reviews.
Yeah, if they can fix their ad placements and when they show up, I would use that as my preferred streaming service.
Oh yeah, they kind of have like a terrible, like it kind of does it like in the middle of things. Sometimes they don't have a lot of ads though, you know, which is good.
Yeah, they don't, but it's just, for me, I would like it if you know, I mean, I don't know how long we get into this conversation, but you select the movie, two or three ads show up, you play the movie, it goes without interruptions, and then at the end of the film, two or three ads, and then that's it.
Yeah, there's less and less the further on in the movie you go. It's true.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know how long you want to have this conversation on.
Well, yeah, we're moving on, but yeah, that's trust me, we go on tangents sometimes talking about other things on all my podcasts.
Trying to keep you on track.
Oh, right, and I appreciate that. John Williams plays Chief Inspector Hubbard, and I always kind of laugh because my friend Dustin is last name Hubbard, so I was like, "Ha ha, that's
Other a cousin. Hubbard.
That's yeah. a cousin of yours."
Again, fun fact for all the listeners: he was actually in the same role on the stage play.
I saw that he was in a also in like another one too, like a TV movie version. Yeah. So he loves, I guess. This was his role, and he did so, like, he was my favorite character, honestly.
Oh, he is.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and it goes to show you, because if you guys all know Hitchcock pretty well, which I'm sure you guys do, since you guys have been kind of diving into that stuff, Hitchcock was a big time, like, he got scared of, like, the law when he was a kid, you know, like, his mom and dad threw him in, jail as like a punishment thing, and since then he's been scared of like cops.
Oh my so, god,
you didn't know that story?
I maybe we talked about it before, I've forgotten, but yeah, something for sure in his past traumatized him,
right? So it's so good because like the police in this is so scary, you know, there's a lot of suspense, like because somebody was saying in a review I saw that what's so great about this movie is the audience becomes the accomplice, you know? So we're sort of rooting for this guy to like, well, I was rooting for him to sort of get out of it. But then when he got her in there, I'm waiting, like my table's turned, exactly. You know? And I'm like, I'm ready for him to get caught.
Yes.
So that she gets out of jail, you know? Cause I'm like,
totally innocent.
She was totally innocent. Yeah, poor girl. You know,
she's rooting for the lovers themselves because that grandma Lam. I mean, the husband was so wicked.
He was. I don't know. He was charismatic enough where I kind of liked him. You know.
Yeah, you're torn. Yeah.
Yeah, you're a little torn, right? What do you think, Don? Do you think were you a little torn on the or did you just hate him the whole time?
Oh no, I'm a huge fan of the inspector. He was always my favorite character. I meant
for the other guy, for the villain, you know, kind of guy. The husband.
Yeah, what was that?
The husband, what's his name? Tony.
Oh, Tony?
Tony.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah, he's a fantastic villain. I love that he's one of those guys that I love that I hate him so much. Yeah. I distinctly remember this. The first time I watched it, I was like, "Oh my God, is he going to get away with this?" And I remember him, and I remember this distinctly because it's the second interrogation when they're at the apartment, and the detective is fiddling around with the keys. And I remember that was the first sign, and I was like, "Oh, he's going to get it. They're going to catch him." And I remember like getting like really excited as soon as I caught on, because I remember that distinctly. That was the first time I realized that he was going to get caught with it. Because like the whole time I had been like, oh my God, he's going to get away with this. Like, no, you're going to send this girl to prison. And then all of a sudden there's that one little thing where the detective fiddles with the keys and he switches them out in the jackets. And I was like, they caught him. They're going to get him. And I remember getting really excited and like really getting into it.
I know. And that ending, by the way, let's talk real quick about that ending. that ending was fucking like suspenseful as shit. Like I'd seen this movie, but it'd been so long, so it was almost like watching it brand new in a way. But like that ending where the dude walks out and he walks out of that thing and they're watching him and they're like
it's basically the narration,
it's commentating, you know.
That is awesome.
A play-by-play, yeah, exactly. So he's like, you know, he's like, okay, he's turning around. Oh no, he's too far gone. Oh wait, he's coming back. Oh yep, he's thought about it. He must. It's the other key. Okay, you know, he remembers that must be that guy's key. I'm gonna go in there, and all of a sudden, you know. Speaking of which, that guy. What was his name? Charles Swan.
Yeah, Swan. That guy was really interesting too to me. I really enjoyed his performance. And I wonder what else he's been in.
Let me find out real quick. of IMDb.
Evil.
He was in Dr. No. I did not know that.
Really? Wow, who was he?
He was Professor, what was his name? Professor Dent. So I'm not sure.
That is him.
Okay.
I know exactly who it is now. Guy that Bond shoots in the hotel room.
Oh, okay.
That's a Smith and Wesson. That's him.
Oh, and he's in Thunderball too. That's funny.
Wow.
He's been in a couple. He was Ernst Stavaro.
Blofeld.
Yeah, that was him.
Huh.
Wow. So he's been in a few.
Yeah.
And God damn, he's from Russia with Love too.
Wow.
Motherfucker's been in more James, almost as many James Bond movies as Sean Connery himself. He was Blofeld in that one as well. So I guess he made a cameo again in that. And anything else? Let me see. I was trying to see if he was. I think he was done for James Bond after that. But that's really funny, you know. So he's he was a great, like, I can tell he's a character actor, you know, like he has that kind of, he's got that look of a character actor, you know, which I love.
Did you realize that Dial M has been made 4 times? There was remakes in 1958, 1967, 1981, and 1998. And one of them was by a different name, but still it's been remade.
Oh.
Yeah, I just found that out. I was like, what? Very interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, definitely.
Apparently they caught on.
Yeah, there was one, I forgot what it was called. The Perfect Murder, I think is what it was called. Yeah.
Perfect Game.
Well, was that one? Because
Perfect Game. I think the one with Michael Douglas. Yeah, I think it's Perfect Game.
Yeah, that's fine.
What? I thought the Perfect Game was a. Wait.
It was with Michael Douglas, I know.
The Perfect Game. Wasn't that the dangerous game in the world? I think that's
now that you say that, maybe now that you say that, I think it is. Maybe it is Perfect Murder.
So I think Perfect Murder is Michael Douglas. Yep. And it's a
I'm confusing it with the game.
The game,
I'm confusing it with the game, that's what it is.
And I think the game was supposed to be like the most dangerous game in the
that's what it is. Yeah, I was confusing it with the game, not a Perfect Murder. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my fault.
The only ones that were popping up on IMDb that were Perfect Game or like sports movies. Something.
Baseball games.
Yeah. So there you go. It was a Perfect Murder, and it was a wealthy Wall Street speculator. Discovers that his wife has a lover, investigates him, and uses the carrot and stick to make him murder his. Oh, so it's a little different. Plan to detail, it seemed like a perfect murder. So it was based on the Frederick Knott play, but not, Why am I doing all these freaking puns? I'm not even meaning to do it. Because I said the Frederick Knott, and it's not just like it, you know, or whatever. But no, it's a little similar, not the same thing, you know. Was that?
You're a punchster.
Me and James Balsamo better duke it out.
Yeah, I know. He's got a book out.
He does. He'd win. Hanging out with him at a horror convention, he just did nonstop puns, like on a like regular, you know, like he just would just do them in his conversations. And I was like, dude, how do you do that? Like, how do you just like, you know,
he's wired that way.
I guess so. I don't know. Maybe he's just perfected that. The perfect pun. Yeah. You know.
I want to talk a bit about obsession with Hitchcock. I mean, Hitchcock's obsession. You know, he chose every pop and every prop in every movie, but especially in this one, he wanted to be exact on every detail. He lost over 20 pounds worrying about this, especially the death scene. And he quoted to somebody, he said, "A murder without gleaming scissors is like asparagus without hollandaise sauce." I thought that was interesting. He wanted to catch the gleam of the scissors in a particular light, and they couldn't do it. And it's just, it made him crazy.
Well, that makes sense, because I heard it took a week to do that scene. You know, a week. And I just can't imagine being on set for a week and for one like little scene. You know, I don't know
if it was every day, but he did it the first day, and then they went back and redid it, you know, several days later, maybe something like that.
But, yeah.
Yeah, he is obsessed with certain details like that.
You hear the stories. You know the movie, what is it? Heaven's Gate, you know?
Yeah.
In that movie, they were like, the director like went over budget and over time because he wanted to get the like the sun just right and everything.
Yeah, they went way over budget on that. That was the first book I read when I came to Hollywood. It was mandatory in my acting class to read that. And it was like, well, Chris Christopherson was in it, and I forget the director's name, but
Cimino.
Yeah, but I mean, my God, it was just an epic failure of a movie because of it.
Oh, yeah. But it was, I mean, honestly, it was an epic failure because of that. Exactly. But it was actually, have you seen it? It is fantastic. It's long as hell.
I think I have seen it. Yeah.
But it's a great movie. Like, I'm like, there's some amazing shots in the movie. And I guess it pays to like sort of be a perfectionist, but in the same sense, when you're working on other people's money, you know,
like being over budget and wasting a lot of studio money. Yeah. But maybe not with the audience. So
maybe, but even the audience apparently just thought it was kind of bland, I guess, or whatever. It did not do very well in the box office. I just think it's a fantastic movie. We're going to do it on Criterion Watch at some point. Because it's a Criterion film. Like, only few movies, even some of the Hitchcock, only a few of the Hitchcock movies are on Criterion, you know? And they're like that. And Notorious is one of them. Criterion is, like, supposedly the top tier, you know, kind of stuff.
The top 100 films or something?
No, that's AFI. They're like, they've got thousands of movies in Criterion. So I'll have to introduce you to some of those someday. Maybe have you on one of our episodes of that, you know, or whatever. Don, as a, you know, you said you grew up kind of watching the Hitchcock movies of like of the American movies, basically, even though this was filmed in the UK and everything, which is very funny. This was like an American movie shot in England, you know, which I think is what he really wanted a lot of times, because I don't think he liked shooting in America. You know, he'd rather be, you know.
Actually, did you know that was filmed in Burbank,
in the Warner
Studios? Yeah, all the inside there was only the B-roll in London, just a few minutes of film. It was the trick. They wanted it to be in Burbank so they could control it better, and because it was from a play, and you know, all inside. So they didn't really need to shoot it in London. Just some of the B-roll was there. That, yeah, kind of interesting.
Well, Don, were you like, so of all those movies, you know, would you like classify this as one of your favorites of the American movies, or just kind of lower on the list?
It would probably be just out of my top five. I mean, revisiting them would probably put everything in place. Going on memory, I still say Vertigo is my favorite. Probably then Suspiria, The Birds. I would have to revisit like Vertigo and Rope and Rebecca and Notorious and Shadow of a Doubt. The one that I always really liked that I never really thought had any credit was Foreign Correspondent.
Oh yeah, we did that for Criterion Watch last year, and the year before then we had done Rebecca. So those were fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I really want to go back to Foreign Correspondent because I always remember liking it, but I never really like there's like two or three scenes in my head, but there's not like anything like connecting them to anything. It's just, you know, the name pops up and there's like two or three scenes, but then like there's like no real connection to anything. So I would have to like go back and revisit most of his stuff. But yeah, for this, it's probably just outside of my top five, maybe top 10 for sure. Mm-hmm. But anything else would be subject to a complete discography revisit. So
yeah,
that's like the best I can say at the moment.
So if you think about it, you know, Hitchcock did like a certain stuff, like he would do suspense thrillers like this, you know, or he would do spy thrillers, you know, and occasionally like he would do like a comedy like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, or which they turned into a spy thriller, which I think is sort of weird because that was not a spy thriller, you know, but I almost feel like they forgot, you know, that it was supposed to be just a regular comedy. I don't know. But then, you know, and then like Trouble with Harry and stuff like that, that's more comedy, you know, based, but it's still got a little murder mystery kind of angle to it. But that's what he really liked. Like he liked those kind of things. And so this movie being like the thriller aspect, I thought was, you know, a lot of fun. You know, I enjoyed it. It was definitely kept me in suspense the whole time. You know, what do you guys think? Larry, were you a suspense? Were you held with suspense?
I love suspense, and I just love the way he does it. And he does it in such a kind of a crafty way too. And he sneaks up on you, and a lot of plot twists. And just when you think you have it figured out, nope, it's the other direction. So, you know, I really enjoy it. And I have to be honest with you, I didn't know much about Hitchcock going into this, but now I want to become an aficionado like you are. And so I'd seen maybe five films or six, and that's about
it. Now you're gonna watch a lot more.
Yeah, I want to go all the way back to the very beginning and watch his evolutionary arc, you know, how he changed over the years.
Yeah. So
it's fascinating to me. So I don't know. I guess Psycho would be my number one at this point, but you know, that's because I don't know that much about him, but maybe it'll change over time.
Well, Psycho's still my favorite of his films, and I think it's the first one I got introduced into Hitchcock, and I think sometimes, like, your first, you know, thing is, like, your favorite, you know, movie or whatever. What was I going to say? Like, so one of my favorite scenes in this movie, and maybe we'll talk about that, maybe we'll go into our favorite scenes, but my favorite scene in the movie, honestly, was the scene where Mark Halliday, the detective guy, lover, is talking to Tony, and he's trying to convince him to like help his wife get off death row, basically. So he's like, maybe you can maybe you can tell the inspector that you did it. He was like, oh, how would I do it? And he tells him exactly what he did. And so that's your favorite.
The whole alibi, or the whole fabrication that he tries to sell on Tony is actually how it went down. And he's just like spitballing it as if he's just like trying to like come up with excuses as to how everything is supposed to fit together into this alternate universe. And he's inadvertently revealing everything that actually worked. And he's just smugly laughing everything off. Absolutely love that.
Right.
And is so glad you said that, because that's my favorite scene too.
What do you think, Larry? Was that your favorite scene, or did you have another one?
Well, I also like the way that he controlled his old pal, you know, Charles, the Swan.
Right.
How he controlled, not only controlled him, but he convinced him to kill his wife in a matter of minutes. Like, how do you do that? My God, the guy is cunning.
That's
massive.
That scene, that long ass scene, oh my God, that was a play in itself. But like that long ass scene where he's in they're talking to each other, and that's probably a second or third favorite scene of mine, because he's like subtly walking over there and making sure that like he's wiping off all the fingerprints.
No, but as he's talking to him.
And then as the guy goes, it's like, can I have some more brandy or whatever? And he looks at her and goes, well, can you put on these gloves first?
The one thing that kills me, is that he pulls the wallet, he pulls the bank book out, and the letter drops, and he has the friend pick it up and he hands it back to him. And then later on he says, well, why am I going to do that? You've got your fingerprints all over it, because you handed it back to me. And I was just like, oh
wow. Yeah, he was a manipulative guy, because
yeah, a master manipulator.
He even said
everything's so fluid.
I know, you know? And he said that one line where he's like, he's talking to the guy, he's talking to Swan, and Swan's like, well, why wouldn't I just go to the police right now and say this is what you're planning to do, blah blah blah. He was like, oh, you could, but who would believe him? And guess what, I can point you into you being there, you know, following these people, right? Because who would believe, you know, who would believe you as opposed to me, who's like, I'm a bigger guy than, you know, I'm a more, influential guy than you are. You're a criminal, you know? And I was just like, oh my God, this is so good. Like,
did that with other people too. He did it with his wife's lover. He turned things around on him.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, wow. Really good.
To go back to our favorite scene where he's like, the guy is telling him, this is how you do it. We've seen this. This is exactly how he did it. And then he goes, well, what about this or this? Why wouldn't I? How could this not work? And then he looks over and goes, you're right. I guess that would be a good, you know, right? Because he's thought about this. Like, he's planned this. You know, this step-by-step, like but he wasn't planning that guy would know. And that was, oh my God. I just absolutely adored that scene. I adored I honestly was like, why are these guys buddy-buddy again? You know, right? And everything. And really, they weren't. You know, at that particular time, Mark was trying to do was get him to freaking go get his wife off there. And he was even like, if you do it, you'll get like only a couple years in prison, but your wife will be off death row, you know, like, or whatever. And he didn't need to, because the inspector already, you know, suspected him, you know? So that was just, that stuff, like this whole movie was amazing, you know? I was very pleasantly surprised at how awesome it was, you know?
Well, you realize you get a sense of that even earlier when you look at how he changes the crime scene around when he realizes that his plan went awry, mm-hmm. where in the blink of an eye, he goes from the entire murder being his friend murdering his wife to now his friend being the blacker that's trying to blackmail his wife for her and her best friend's relationship, and it's now gone awry. Uh-huh. That he switched everything around to where now he's yeah. off the hook completely, and it's this friend that he doesn't even know, supposedly, his friend that he doesn't even know coming around to blackmail his wife and her lover for their relationship, and turns it out to where he was the one that was doing it all along. Oh. And he does it all in like a split second, to where he just does the two or three things with the stockings, and then he sets up the yeah. bank slip, and then he pins it on them as and him as being the murderer.
You also don't forget the picture, because the picture with Alfred Hitchcock on it, because he has that picture the whole time, you know, or whatever. And then at one point the inspector's like, "Did you know this man?" And he was like, "No." And then he starts going, "Okay, maybe I do know this. Oh, I did see that guy there. Oh, okay. Oh, it's this guy." And he pulls off the picture and he shows yeah. it to him. And I'm like, wait a minute. He's just, see, that's where I think he slipped up. That's where I think the
I think that's where he went a little bad. He wasn't as smart, because you shouldn't have acknowledged anything.
Right.
You couldn't have known. But he got out of it, but, you know, it was slippery slope.
Well, in the beginning,
I think he brings up a great point, because that was always the one thing for me, was how he knew. Because the entire thing was, you know, you realize the entire film is about trying to figure out how he got in, and they're trying to figure it out with the key. Like, how did the key not work? Like, you know, she's got the key, he's got the key. How did he get in? And I think it is the scene when he pulled the picture off and said, "Oh yeah, that was him." Mm-hmm. And he gets up matter-of-factly and points out and says, "Here, this was him." And mm-hmm. he probably, he was smart enough, he would have pulled it out and said, "It's someone in here. The name's familiar, but I think it's someone in here," and have the inspector point him out and then point to him and say, this was him. And he goes, "Oh yeah, that was him." Yeah. I think that was the key. That was the one that set it in motion.
That planted a seed in the detective's mind, but the
right.
whole case, I mean, the key is the key to the whole case. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was going back and forth and back and forth, and I was a little befuddled by it. I'm thinking, wait a minute, how does this work? So I was, you know, I wasn't quick enough to figure it out right away. I had to see it a second time.
It was
all fell into place.
It was just fantastic. Like, just that whole, you're right. Like, that scene in itself with him coming in there and showing it, that was it. That was the inspector's, like, knowing that that there's something, okay, there's something off with this, because now he's changing his tune, right? My other favorite thing was, there was one point where where I guess the detective was, or whatever, the inspector was getting on there, and in the beginning of the film, where, or the beginning of the inspector's and visit and everything, he was starting to snoop too much. So he says, "You know, I'm gonna call up my lawyer. And now you're going to have to deal with him, you know," or whatever. So he calls up his lawyer and he starts going, "Oh, this inspector thinks that my wife did it. Ha ha ha. No, stop laughing. You know, let's meet you down there at the police station so that basically we can get away from this, you know, from incriminating ourselves or whatever, or digging ourselves too deep into this." And I felt like, once again, I felt really sorry for Grace Kelly. Like, her character, Margot, did not deserve this. I mean, maybe it was a little bit of karma from her cheating on her husband and not just, you know, divorcing her husband or whatever, or telling him she's not in love with him anymore and she'd rather be with this other guy. But she didn't deserve to be murdered for it.
Oh, she didn't deserve that. So I think everybody felt that way.
Yeah.
We were sympathetic to her.
Yeah, I mean,
we all turned our affiliation.
Yeah, because at first she's sort of like, she's living this double life, and that's how, like, the beginning of the movie starts, you know, which was beautifully done, is like how it shows them two, and then all of a sudden shows her and the other guy, you know. So it shows, like, two different you know, her having two different lives, and it yeah. does it so effing quick. Like, it's yeah. just like one after another, and
right.
you couldn't do that today. You know, I don't yeah. think
so. From the very beginning, when they just kind of coldly kissed each other like a foot peck, and then about less than a minute later, she's passionately kissing somebody else. I'm thinking, what?
Yeah.
And it's great. Oh, this is interesting.
And so that guy was so charming too. Like, he was so nice. You know, like, even though he knew he was having an affair with, you know, his, you know, the guy's right. wife and everything right in front of the guy, he's just very like nice to him. And, you know, I mean, he wants to tell like the guy, you know, like he's trying to convince her to, you know, tell her. And even to the end or to that one scene where he's just like, honey, he knows, they know, just, you know, admit it now, you know, like, you know, cause I think like there's a little bit of a, like, okay, now everybody knows it's out in the open, even though the guy knew it the whole time.
Well, the body language we did too, the sidelong glances and everything, I could sense it right away.
Yeah. Well, he even said that too. He said he could tell that they were in love when you looked up in the, you know, looked up at the guy's, was a window, and he looked up the window and he saw the guy, her and him, and they were, or her and him, and they weren't talking, but he could just tell they were in love. Yeah. And, you know, like that line about that was just fantastic. I honestly, if I were to direct a play, you know, this would be one of the ones I would put on my list of like movies or plays I would want to direct. I don't know how it is as a play, how different it is, because obviously, you know, I've heard that the scene with her being in the jury, you know, the courtroom scene is not in the play at all. You know, that was Hitchcock, you know, which I almost feel like didn't even need to be there. It just needed some kind of notice that she was, you know, and you know, she was arrested for it. That's all that's needed. Did you guys notice there was an intermission in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For 1 second.
Yeah, it was like a quick intermission, but
I mean, I couldn't even go to the bathroom. It was like started again.
Did you try? Did you try to go to the bathroom? Oh, that would have been hilarious.
I'm joking.
That would have been hilarious. Oh no, I gotta go back. Gotta rewind.
I drank my popcorn.
It was definitely pretty quick. I think, I don't know if that's because it's a DVD and a movie home, you don't need it to be that long. Though if you watch the Gone with the Wind intermission, Jesus Christ, I had to fast forward that. You know? You know, that was definitely enough for you to go to the bathroom and come back.
Yes, it was. Yeah. No, I have a funny story about that sometime, but that would be a major tangent. But
yeah. That'll be another movie review.
Yeah. Another, when we do that one. Yeah. But my daughter Bonnie Butler got to meet the real Bonnie Butler from Gone with the Wind. So I'll just say it like, yeah, the one woman who played that.
Oh, okay. That's,
she was 6 months old, and they don't allow in, you know, children like that. And the woman that played her said, if anybody hears a baby crying, that's the other Bonnie Butler. Everybody laughs. And so she's very nice. We got a picture of her.
But anyway. That's cute. Well, I think this is about the good time to wrap it up. So I guess ending thoughts, would you guys, obviously this is a movie you guys would watch again, right? Like, this is definitely recommend to others, right, Don?
Yeah. I would probably put his like more renowned films before this one. You know, maybe not like a first time Hitchcock viewer, just because like it's like not as, it's like stagey and it's like really kind of like old fashioned and stuff like that. So it's not like something that would be like a little bit more flashy and vibrant and lively, like some of his other films that I think people would be easier to get into. But, you know, like once you get past that, this would probably be very, very high on like my recommendation list. Like I said, it's maybe just outside of my top five and me, you know, like for sure, like top 10 of his films pending a revisit, but you know, yeah, it's a lot of fun and it's definitely, definitely worth a watch.
All right. What about you, Larry?
Yeah, highly recommend it. I'd say 4.5 stars at least. Is that your system? Well, 5 stars?
Are we doing rankings?
We like... did what we ranked it another time, but I don't know if we rank anymore.
I don't know. It's been one of those things where I'm like,
you know, it's one of the top ones that I'd recommend.
Yeah, I mean, if I did give it a ranking, I would give it 4 stars, you know, out of 5, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. That's probably right where I'd be, like a 4, 4.5 if I was feeling generous.
Well, it's funny because I don't think there's really many, if at all, any like ones or twos, you know, 2 stars. Like, Hitchcock's a 3-star or higher kind of guy, you know?
Like I said, I mean, Hitchcock has like the most 5 out of 5s of any director I've ever met. So,
right. You know, like so many people just, they teach his films in film school. You know, they don't do that for everybody. Now they might do it for like Tarantino or, you know, but they don't do it for like Kevin Smith. Like I love Kevin Smith to death, but they don't try to, you know, divulge into the world of Kevin Smith, you know, or whatever the films of his. They just, unless it's a writing exercise, I guess. But all in all, I think it's a really good movie. It's like you said, Don, I think you've said it well enough where it's one of those films where I would definitely recommend it, but not to somebody who's new. No new Hitchcock fans, you know, it is definitely not a new, you know, new blood. New blood would have to be one of like Psycho or The Birds or Vertigo. One of those would be an easier movie to kind of, you know, get into Hitchcock.
Yeah,
I think that's because they're one of the newer ones too. You know, this is a little older, so I feel like it doesn't, you know, it doesn't fit like that. But it was fantastic, a fantastic movie, great introduction of Grace Kelly, you know, and then and I was just telling Larry earlier this week that my friend Lisa recommended, because she had heard about it but she hadn't seen it yet, but there's a movie called Grace of Monaco. That stars Nicole Kidman. By the way, Nicole Kidman is no Grace Kelly. Like, she does not look near like Grace Kelly. Like, I love Nicole Kidman, but like Grace was probably to me one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood.
Very refined. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other ones are too imposing. I think she just doesn't carry it as well. She was regal. Grace Kelly was regal, and she belonged as a princess and a queen.
Mm-hmm. And she was perfect for this movie. So, Don, what have you, sir? What have you been up to lately?
I have a lot of stuff. So I host several podcasts. Not all of them are active, but I'm involved in several. The main show is called No More Room in Hell Presents Fresh Cuts, nice. Which is a weekly look at the biggest release, you know, streaming, VOD, theater, what have you. You can find that on the Dark Discussions Network. Be careful, because there's a Dark Discussions podcast and a Dark Discussions Network. You would want the network, because there's like, it's kind of like this, where there's like 20 or 30 different shows underneath the banner.
Right. So, we just changed it. Obviously you saw that, but we changed our name to the Indie Film Cafe Network because you do this really amazing thing for us, and we really appreciate it, Don, honestly, where you will post all the links to all the different podcasts, and you'll tag like me and Larry and a few others, and we like absolutely 100% appreciate it. So don't ever think we don't. I would see it and I'd be like, you know, Indie Film Cafe, and then it would say Sexploitation Sleaze Cast, blah blah blah, right? And then I'll be like, oh, well, okay, now it needs to be the Indie Film Cafe Network, because it just seems like Indie Film Cafe is the, you know, is the show or whatever. And it's not, it's, you know, that's a different show that's on here. We just don't do it where we have separate actual podcasts, you know. We do everything every month. So this is a month, you know, this is once a month, you know, we have as your show, The Fresh Cuts, sounds very similar to our Horror, Blood, and Coffee, which will be back this season, so in June. So, and, you know, we're going to be diving into Willy's Wonderland in that episode. That's going to be fun. Yeah, so we got, you know, we've got these, you know, that's, you know, a similar show. So yeah, I appreciate that. And do you have any other ones that you're a part of? Or is
Like I said, there's others that aren't really as active. There's another show called Underwater Kaiju from Outer Space.
Nice.
Where we look at giant monsters and, you know, Godzilla, Gamera, King Kong, stuff like that.
Cool.
And then there's another show which has been on hiatus just because, you know, one of the hosts is involved in the medical community and the world at large is enough of a reason to know why we're on hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly. But,
you know, with everything coming out, we're, you know, getting our plans together. That show is called the Graveyard Shit Podcast.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. We thought graveyard shift, but it was just, everybody's had that. So let's just separate ourselves, remove the one letter and call ourselves that.
Well, there you go. Now, Larry, you're busy, but not with podcasts except for ours, which we really appreciate, but you are busy as hell as an actor and good God, you know,
I've never been this busy in my life. So
Well, we were just talking about that the other day as you were just on set, then you were on set, then you were on set.
Yeah.
And I think after, you know, after today, you'll be on set again this week, you know.
So I've got three or four more coming up this month, this next month. And then after that, more and more. I'm working on 12 or 13 for the year.
Jesus Christ. All right.
3 months.
That's good, man.
It's like, crazy. I don't understand it either. Well, I committed to these things a year ago when, during the pandemic, and who knew where they're all going to hit at the same time? You know, they're all greenlit, and people are fighting over me like, no, we want them first. And, well, you got to do a hard commitment, you know, lock me in. And so it's just crazy, but I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm the only old person left. They all died.
I don't think that's true, but that might be. I don't know. Who knows?
But it's a curse and blessing, you know, and when you wish for something, be careful what you wish for. So it's a little too much.
Yeah. So, well,
but it's fun playing different characters.
Exactly. We're very happy that you're able to fit your time and do this show as well. We'll be back next month with Notorious, and we have an amazing guest. Lisa Cantarell will be joining us. I want to say what's next one after that. Did I tell you that one yet? Do you know? I like to have everybody know these things ahead of time so they
I have the list. Oh no, they just had it through Notorious.
Okay, yeah. So Notorious and then Trouble with Harry, I think, was going to be the August one. But this is June. So thank you guys. This is amazing. Very appreciative to have you guys on here talking with us about this. Join us next. Join us next month for the next episode. I'm really excited. Notorious is honestly one of my favorites. But see, it's really hard because I see this Dial In for Murder. I love it so much. And it's like, it's going to be tough when we rank them at the end and decide which ones are, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, like what's our favorite, you know, top 10, you know, or whatever. It's gonna be tough. But once again, Don, we're gonna have you on the show again, I'm sure, or on one of the many other podcasts. We've got a ton of other podcasts that are on this network, and you would fit in with any of them. So are you, Larry, you know. If we can steal you away from some of the movies or so.
Oh yeah. I need to take a breather.
Oh yeah, okay, so you'll just view it as a break. Okay, understandable. All right, well, thank you guys so much, and thank you all for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Tune in next month and we will see you then. Bye.
Later.
Let's begin. All right. That is new, by the way, everybody. That is new.
Oh, yeah. I've never experienced that before.
Yeah.
Do I have to click on something?
No, it's good. You're all good.